Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
The forcible installation of prepayment meters in the homes of people over 85 is to be banned under new rules from Ofgem. They're laying out a new code of practice to protect vulnerable customers. Foreign Office Minister Andrew Mitchell says the government is advising against all travel to Sudan. Mr. Mitchell spoke in the House of Commons as the country's civil war continues.
The violence, Madam Deputy Speaker, broke out between the Sudanese Armed Forces, the SAF, and the Rapid Support Forces, the RSF, in Khartoum on Saturday morning. This is a tragic turn of events after months of constructive dialogue.
Hens and other captive birds can be kept outside again from today. It means the return of free-range eggs. And protesters have disrupted play at the World Snooker Championships in Sheffield. A man climbed onto one of the tables and tipped orange paint powder over it. From Radio News Hub, I'm Edward Breslin.
Now get 25% off coffee and pastries at Cafe Nero 7 days a week with Compare's Market. Take it away, Sergey.
I need a Nero. I'm holding out for a Nero to get a flat white. It's gotta be strong, and it's gotta taste good, and it's gonna be made just right. I need a Nero!
Only with the Meerkat app from Compare's Market.
With a qualifying product, one membership a year, 25% off barista-made drinks and pastries. App only, 2 codes per day. Exclusions and T's and C's apply.
Colourful. Coming up next, colourful, Julius. Colourful Radio.
Black people over 25 are more at risk of developing type 2 diabetes, which can lead to serious complications if left untreated. However, type 2 diabetes can be prevented or delayed. Check your risk online in minutes with the Diabetes UK Risk Tool to start your journey to a healthier you. Search Know Your Risk today.
Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com and apps. This is Colorful Radio. Colorful Radio.
Africa in Focus is sponsored by Dermadew Lotion. Visit dermashark.co.uk.
Colorful Radio.
Good afternoon, or good morning, or even good evening, depending on the time zone that you're connecting to us from. Welcome again to Africa in Focus, and I'm your host, Julius Baluto. And I'm privileged. I'm joined by a great lady. She's doing a lot of work, of course, in business here in the UK. And her name is Mary Jonjo. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's brilliant. So to our listeners and viewers, just I give you the chance to introduce yourself and say hello to everybody.
Oh, hello, listeners. I almost said viewers. My name is Mary Njonjo, and I live and reside in London. And I am an investor. I'm in business, and I certainly link investors with opportunities in Africa.
Oh, that's great, Mary. It's very important what you do. And of course, in our case, we like talking to people like you, because sometimes somebody somewhere, they're like, I don't know what to do. I don't know which dream to follow. Or I would love to do this kind of work, but I don't know where to start. Maybe give us a hint of what your job involves.
Yeah, well, my job involves identifying suitable, credible developers and working with them. For example, right now I'm working with one of the top brands in Kenya, actually two of them, top brands in Kenya, and they're credible. Actually, one is in the Nairobi Stock Exchange. So we look for credible companies that are selling properties in Kenya, and we link them with investors who are in UK, or rather in diaspora in general. So we are not limited to UK alone. We also target people in Europe, in America, in Canada, and Schengen countries.
And perhaps, probably many times, people want to say, oh, okay, yeah, somebody's doing this, but how did they start? And what was the motivation? And how was it like?
How I started is, I've always loved anything to do with construction from when I was, maybe from 15 years ago. I used to love, you know, importing construction material goods. That time I was in Kenya. So I would import materials from China and sell them to wholesale to people who are in, I don't even know, Kirinyaga Road. There are many shops that deal with plumbing or electrical goods, all of them related to construction. So I've always had a passion for construction for many years, and I got an opportunity, and I was able to work closely with one company whereby I was their main diaspora marketing agent, and I did that for about 7 years. And after that, you know, the rest is history. I just got into it and I got to understand it way better. And I think now I am quite experienced in the industry. So my passion, it's something that grew in me, you know, for many years. And I really enjoy seeing, you know, something develop from scratch to something beautiful and amazing, and this thing is called home by other people.
Wow, that's amazing. It's a story of building something from nothing.
Yes.
So have you had the opportunity to be on many construction sites while you were in Kenya?
Oh yeah, I mean, I visit a lot of sites, completed or ongoing, or even on paper. You know, you can have a site on paper, so it is just ideas on paper. So I love also looking at those ideas on paper and visualizing, you know, the end product. But yes, when I'm in Kenya, I visit sites, you know, I visit completed projects, and I like seeing different I keep asking myself, what was the idea of this developer when they were doing this? You know, so different developers, different designs, and different concepts. So I really enjoy visiting different developments, you know, just to see the creativity of each developer. Yes.
Okay, now, and then when you talk about the experience on the ground, or like previous one dealing with Kenya as marketer, how would you say diaspora has been like since you started?
Since I started in the diaspora in 2016, and I can say because of what the diaspora were used to having, probably briefcase you know, developers coming and probably, you know, conning people, or people were just losing money left, right, center because people thought maybe the diaspora was an easy target. So I really met some resistance when I started. It was quite hard. But, you know, we stayed on consistently, opened an office in East London, a place called Chadwell Heath. And I started visiting cities, you know, different cities from north, you know, east, west. I was quite consistent over the next couple of years. And, you know, eventually the word started getting round that we finally have a credible company. So I can say, you know, right now the market is driving itself, but initially it was not as easy.
And in terms of that experience of dealing with diaspora, were disappointed, and do you think things have changed?
What I can say is the mentality of the diasporans is changing, because most of them have even sent money to their own relatives and lost money, and people are getting now more knowledgeable and knowing that you'd rather put your money in an investment, which is the main thing, is ensuring that you're putting your money in a company that is credible with a track record. So if you ensure that your money is in a good company with a good track record history, then you're safe. So people are getting to know that, yes, I can help my family, but I can also build myself, you know, along the way, you know, because I'm sure, I think the main thing I hear with many people is that I've done this, I've supported my family for 25 years, I have nothing to show for myself. So people are getting to learn that, yes, I can help my family, but I can also invest in myself or for my children. So the mentality is changing, and obviously now social media is also very helpful. So if you want to find out if a company is credible or not, it's very easy to find, you know, through the reviews on a certain website or a social media probably, you know, review. So I can say things are changing. People are a bit more receptive now because they can easily do due diligence.
Indeed, and also things have changed over the time because also in terms of also the, if people are focused much more on the law and protection from the law. I remember one time interviewing the chairman of Law Society of Kenya. It was concerning people who had lost money through this investment back home. And he did actually say, they had to change policy so that anyone who wished to join the legal profession in Kenya, they had to pay some indemnity fee.
Right.
Now that indemnity fee, if they messed up in their career, becomes like form of compensation for the people who have lost the money.
Wow, okay. Good idea.
It was very instructive. And since that time, because my challenge to the profession was you are supposed to protect Kenyans and they shouldn't lose money from lawyers.
Yeah.
He did say that anyone who wished, now from that time they changed the regulation. Anyone, if you want to engage any lawyer from on the ground in Kenya, if you go to
identify this safe place. Once they know this is safe, they are willing to go full throttle. And like you know, remittances are our number one foreign earner right now. That tells you a lot. Tells you a lot. We've had a bad stretch in the past, but now people, like I said, they know how now to do due diligence. They don't have to rely on relatives or wait for photos of neighbors' houses. So the appetite is there. And once you develop a good reputation in the market, the market just drives itself. You get referrals left, right, center. Yes.
By happy customers.
By happy customers, yes.
This is Colorful Radio.
Colorful Radio.
During life, your skin is subject to many conditions, leaving your skin rougher and tighter. We want to help. At DermaShack, our unique formula provides day-to-day moisture for all skin types. Our signature cream, Dermadew, is a cream that can be used for both specific areas of dry skin and as a daily moisturizer. So why don't you try our cream, Dermadew, an intense rehydration cream that leaves your skin like silk. Please go to our website, dermashack.co.uk, to see our skincare range and begin your journey into total moisturization. Dermadew, total body cream, complete moisturization.
You know, I started in 2016, so I've housed a few people are landlords, others live there, others, their children live there. So, you know, I have all these, others have tenants. You know, so since 2016, I have had, I've sold about 500 units, you know, around 500 units, yes. So I can say probably out of that, 70% of the people, or rather of the units that I've sold, most of the people have occupied the units.
Wow, that's amazing. So probably for the benefit of diaspora Kenyans or even investors. Supposing a Kenyan just want to buy a house or apartment or even land in Kenya, maybe how do you explain the process?
Okay.
In a way that they can understand.
Okay. The process is quite, it's not really hard as people think it is. But I always say, you know, I would rather you buy a property through an established company, because an established company will not fold and disappear, you know. But, you know, if you're going to engage someone, maybe a broker on the ground there, that person tomorrow, maybe their phone will be switched off. So I the starting point, first of all, is to know who you're engaging. Is it a properly structured company? You know, what is their reputation like? Who are they in the market? What have they delivered? You know, that's the starting point. Then number two, probably now you go to your needs. What is your need? What do you need? Is it a 3-bedroom? Is it a 2-bedroom? You know, what do you want? Do you want to rent it out? Do you want to make it your own home? You know, we all buy houses for different reasons. So you need to identify, why am I buying a house first? So if it is for, you know, yours to stay, probably, you know, you want a maisonette, probably you don't like going up the stairs or maybe using the lifts and whatnot. So first of all, you identify the typology. Is it a maisonette? Is it an apartment? So once you have that in mind and you have identified, then now you go to the other nitty-gritties. So which is now the paperwork. So the first thing is obviously you can ask for a title of the property. So, for example, for apartments, they would give you now the mother title, because as you all know now, you know, through the new law, you can get subsectional titles for each individual apartment. So, ideally, after you've done the search, then you're able now to, if you're happy with the search, usually some people engage lawyers to do that, that's fine, but these days you can do it online. Everything is straightforward, like you don't need to. But if you feel, you know, you don't understand the process, you can engage a lawyer and they can do the search for you. After that, if you're happy with the search, then you can proceed. So normally what would follow automatically is a letter of offer from the company. So the company would give you probably 10, 14 days for you to accept the offer. Once you accept it, then you will go to the next step, which is probably paying a deposit. Usually it's about 10%. So once you sign the letter of offer, then the next step is you pay another 10%, and which makes it now 20%. Then you get a very important document, which I tell people, if you have not signed this, then you have not made a purchase, which is called the sale agreement. And a sale agreement, I've seen many people in the past, you know, not take it very seriously. So you sent a sale agreement, you stay with it, and you're still remitting funds. Remember, if you don't sign a sale agreement, if it is not executed on both ends, that sale agreement is invalid. So it's very, very important for you to ensure that the sale agreement has been signed by you or your lawyers or your legal representative, and also has been signed by the developer or the person selling to you this property. So, and along with that goes your ID copy, your PIN copy, and probably your photo. So, during the sale agreement process, ideally there are 3 copies. So, one, for the people living in diaspora, you need to notarize it, because if it is not notarized, you don't want complications later on of people saying, you are in the diaspora, how did you sign this? You know, you are not present. So, make sure it is notarized here in the, you know, in the UK or wherever you are in diaspora. So, 1 copy is left with you. 1 copy goes to lands, and the other copy is left with the developer. So it's very important, and I keep telling people that ensure that your sale agreement is properly executed, because this is the document that will produce, or rather will be used to process your subsection or title. So without a properly executed sale agreement, then you cannot get a subsection or title. So I keep telling people, ensure that you have a fully executed sale agreement. So after that, once you finish your payments, that's when you wait for the developer, you know, to finish. But normally, as you finish your payments, that's when they are finishing the development. And on completion, you get your title. But of course, for a complete project, it's different. or rather, you know, a complete house, because within 3 months you are able to get all your documents, fully executed within a short while.
Wow! So there's difference between purchasing land and purchasing ready-built house.
Absolutely, big difference. Because with land, I think it's very straightforward, because you're just shown a piece of land, you do your due diligence, and you purchase it, and that's it. But for a purchase of a house, a bit more goes into it, because especially if it's off-plan, because I have really, you know, specialized in off-plan, because it has a lot of flexibility. For people in diaspora, they want flexibility, because there's so many other obligations here in diaspora. People have mortgages, you know, bills and whatnot. So you find out that, we found out over time that it was easier to sell houses that were off-plan than complete houses, because complete houses, you're supposed to pay within like 6 months. The balance, or 3 months, the balance, you know, after you've paid your 20% deposit. But with off-plan, at least you can be, probably if the construction is for 24 months, you can pay a 20% deposit as they start, and the balance is spread within the 24 months. So you have flexibility in payment. Yes. So during this period is when now you're able to also do your paperwork. So it's different. It's different processes for different different houses, or rather different, for different developments.
And for those diaspora investors also, in terms of, when it comes to, if you want to go and invest in Kenya also, whichever way, whether it's to build a house or buy land, are there things maybe they need to know?
Yeah, of course.
Or check on, I know.
Or check on, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you know, there is, what I can say mostly is, first of all, you have to identify what do you want. So once you know what you want, this one will guide you in knowing. For example, if it's a house to stay, probably your retirement home, you don't want to be in the city center. So that will guide you even to where are you looking, you know, which area are you targeting. Other things, you know, are the normal things, the due diligence part, you know. And if you're going to Kenya, I always tell someone, if you're buying a piece of land, go and even know the neighbors who border you. You know, talk to them, find out if this land, piece of land, really belongs to the person who is selling to you. Because back then we used to have people who would sell pieces of land that were not there. So only when you start fencing is when you know that for sure that piece of land was belonged to someone else, because someone else would appear and say that was their piece of land. And also it's a good thing, it's a good strategy. Go and fence it. If it's a piece of land you've bought, immediately buy it and fence it. Because that is also another way of also making sure that your property is secured. So there are many ways. Engage a legal representative. You know, they see things which you cannot see sometimes, even in agreements, small clauses. They sift through that and they can save you quite a lot. Just as one clause can make you lose your money. So sometimes it's good to engage a legal representative who has experience in these kind of things.
And not just any lawyer, because...
And exactly. Who has experience and has a reputation in the industry?
Yeah, because lawyers are like doctors.
Exactly.
You have dentists, you have psychologists.
Yes. Yes, very true. Yeah.
So if you pick up a dentist when you wanted your head to be cured...
Yeah. Oh, goodness.
It's not going to happen.
Not going to happen. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so the right kind of lawyer.
Yeah.
And who understands land issues.
Yes.
Or property and all that.
Yeah.
Extremely important.
Colorful radio. Colorful radio.
So in terms of when you look into the growth of, I mean, Kenya, one of the things I've seen is explosion of the property industry is just exploding, you know, everywhere you go. Is it very competitive, or what comes to your mind when you see all these companies selling land, all these companies selling houses?
I can tell you something, Mbalucho. I can tell you ownership in Kenya is so low. It's so I think home ownership is at 10%, while countries like Singapore are at 90%. So I'm talking about home ownership. So you can see so many property companies, but I can assure you that we have a huge shortage in housing of about 2.2 million right now. And it rises with about over 200,000 per year. And it keeps rising. So the shortage is so big that even the companies you see cannot do anything to it. For example, like I told you, that I've done 500 units since 2016. But it's nothing compared to the demand in the market. So in terms of shortage in Kenya, it's massive of home ownership.
And in terms of what is being invested in, what would you say probably where we'll talk about low-cost housing? Would you say probably this need for that more than any other types?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, home ownership, especially, you know, look at the Kenyans who are living under, you know, the normal, what do you call it? Under, you know, who are living below average. They're the majority. We are looking at about 90% or maybe 85%. These are the people who, you know, who need this kind of properties, the affordable housing. So, yes, the affordable housing is something that can really, really help assist Kenyans to house them, but it has to be done, like, properly. Because, you know, currently, I know the government is very keen on this, and this would really, really help a lot. Because I know under the current regime right now is you don't even need, I think, a huge deposit. I think you rent to own, you know, so you're paying some monthly installments and eventually the house becomes yours. So, yeah. The market is quite wide. You know, affordable housing would be very, very helpful with the current situation we have.
And which perhaps area are you predominantly operational in when you come to Kenya? Is it Nairobi or outskirts, or where is it?
For me, I'm currently, mainly it's been Nairobi, but now we are, we have Kiambu, we have a bit of Mombasa, you know, so, but mainly, predominantly, it's Nairobi. Yeah. And a bit of Naivasha as well.
Naivasha is such a beautiful place as well.
Yes.
Is it the flamingos?
Yes.
Lake Naivasha.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
We have some beautiful homes there for retirement homes.
Okay.
Yeah. And Nanyuki as well.
And in terms of the business part of it, have you. What will you say your clientele is like? Do you get investors from the UK who go to build one house or many houses together, or just individual Kenyans who go to purchase one-offs, or how does it look like?
I think mainly my focus since 2016 has been on individual Kenyans. But like I said, you know, since this year, you know, as part of growth, now I'm focusing more on corporates, people who want to, you know, to partner with people who have probably land in Kenya and, you know, and form JVs, or rather, you know, investors who are interested in maybe forming partnerships with the county government, say of Nairobi, you know, through PPPs. So right now we are, we've grown into now dealing with people who want to go large scale, as opposed to dealing with individuals. Although even individuals, I'm not like turning them away, but we have upscaled our way of operation.
Tell me something about, they used to call it Kenfest. Kenfest is like, they say, is like one-stop shop, whereby all things will be done under one umbrella. So if you were to apply that principle and someone in the UK just goes to Kenya, in that one Kenfest, have you come across it and has it been very useful? Because if you want to invest in Kenya, they're like the ones to give you the advice and process whatever else, documentations, anything. If you want to form a company, they can advise you. Have you ever dealt with them or no?
Personally, no. But, yeah, they would help. Anything that can bridge that small gap there is helpful. But I've never dealt with them.
Okay. I really appreciate you being with us because it's good because you are giving us information that we don't have. Sometimes you get Kenyans, diaspora, they want to go and purchase building. They are confronted by this talk about gated community. They are confronted by leasehold and freehold and all these are terminologies. Some of them are not familiar with because you only come across them when you are purchasing a house or you want to build one. Maybe explain to us the value of a gated community as compared to the one that's not gated. which is better? Let them fight.
I always tell people in the diaspora, go to the gated. No hard feelings for people who are not in the gated, but go for the gated because probably security is much better. And is that there is that feeling of, you know, homeliness,
community.
You know, community, you know, probably you'd get to know your neighbor a bit more better. And obviously, you know, you get to form bonds with this community because these are not people moving in and out. These people have also made it their homes. So for me, a gated community, I think it's a plus, mainly because of security.
But there are some people also who are very interesting and they lived in communities and they like, I want my privacy now.
Yes. I guess it's about just preference, you know. But personally, I wouldn't mind. I always, people from the diaspora, remember, people from the diaspora have stayed in a very structured environment. So just let, if someone is relocating back to Kenya and being used to this kind of structured environments, you know, you probably are better off in a gated community.
Because you know within the perimeter fence,
yes.
You know where the supermarket
exactly.
is. Exactly. You know your watchman.
You know your watchman, exactly.
And they know
not
you.
Anyone can just come through, yeah. You know, just through the gate. You know, there is protocol.
Yeah, you know.
So, yeah, for me, gated.
Yeah, they found many people, interesting characters. Someone who's like, okay, I want my bungalow to be in a forest. And you build fence around it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the locals do that comfortably. But remember, they're used to the dynamics there, you know, and whatnot. So I think it's just a matter of preference. But having lived in the diaspora, I think not only the gated community, I'm even talking about apartments. I'm talking about apartments whereby you have amenities within the development. So you have a gym, you have a small supermarket, you have a small swimming pool, you have a small, you know, small things here and there. So you find out that people who whenever even you're floating these products in the market, people prefer where there is like a structured
some
way
form of order.
Yes, a structured way of living.
Wow. Then another question would be, because you've been in the industry for some time, some Kenyans or other people in the diaspora, we want to buy something, you know, purchase land, and sometimes the confusion between the leasehold and the freehold. Someone's like, I'm buying a piece of land, which is my land. Why is it leasehold and not freehold?
Right. The difference is just rates. One you pay for rates, the other you don't. That is the only difference. And like I said, you know, when you have doubts with these kind of terminologies, there is you just go to your legal representative, whom will break it down for you. But like I said, the lease is there is rates you pay for, you know, and it's usually a lease goes for 99 years, but it's renewable, just like here in the UK. And then obviously now the freehold, you don't pay any rates.
So that's a major difference, yeah?
Yes, it's just the rates. But they're both, you can both use them as collateral in okay. a bank.
Yeah.
Whether it's lease, whether it's freehold.
Okay.
Yeah. They're both, you know, ways of proving ownership.
Amazing. So therefore, in terms of your work, and of course it's important you mention the ways that people used to be duped. I know a friend who went in haste looking for some land to buy.
Yeah.
But in a minute, a crook shows him somewhere there was grass
yeah.
near the city.
Mm.
And that was only supposed to go for 1 million shillings.
Yeah.
Kenya shillings. Not, you know, it's not that much money but given the any piece of land in the yeah. city, Nairobi,
ooh, yeah.
that's like throwing away because the land there is expensive.
Yeah.
Very expensive.
Yeah.
So he quickly thinks, wow, this is cheap enough, and decides to give a deposit. So these guys, he's doing this 3 days.
Does he do any
three days before? He's doing this 3 days before he comes back. Yeah. So this guy tells him, you know what? You have to pay deposit. How much? 250,000 shillings. And then after that, he tells him, oh, look, you have to commit or we're going to have to sell it to someone else. But not because he has seen the land, it's all full of grass. And he doesn't want to lose the opportunity. He comes the day after. Faithfully, he meets the two characters who are sailing. And he gives them money. And they exchange, sell, whatever. Not a proper agreement. Just to show that they received money from him. And their telephone numbers. And now they plan the day after for them to come and show him everything about the land.
So you don't buy a piece of land like a piece of bread yeah, from a kiosk.
That's what I'm trying to illustrate why people lose their money.
Exactly.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So he goes there the day after.
Yeah.
They were nowhere to be seen.
Of course. And their numbers were switched off.
Their telephone numbers switched off.
Exactly.
Frustrated, he's yeah. standing there throwing his hands up in the air.
Yeah.
And another innocent brother there tells him, yeah, what's the problem? Why are you so angry?
Yeah.
You're standing alone.
Yeah.
I can't reach these guys, you know, we were to meet and all that. Meet for what? I just bought this land and they were to come and show me where the boundaries or whatever. It's like, are you seriously? You seriously bought that land there? I say, yeah. I say, where would you buy a siwa from the council?
Oh my god.
Because you know when it rains,
yeah.
even places where there is cement,
yeah.
the sand goes there.
Yeah.
Grass can grow.
Yes. Oh.
He didn't even go near to check. Underneath was all cement. It was a siwa from Nairobi Council. Money gone, lost.
Yeah.
So the things we are sharing here, it's yeah. very important.
Yeah.
Number one, rule number one from that story, never buy anything when you don't have enough time.
Absolutely. And there is no rush in buying property.
Yeah.
There is no rush. First of all, if the seller is not happy for you to, is not happy to wait, you do the due diligence, just tell them goodbye. You know, because you cannot buy property in a rush and you can't be rushed. If he's saying he's got another buyer, let him sell to the other buyer. Then exactly. It means that was not, it didn't belong to you. You know, let him sell to the other buyer. You have to do your due diligence slowly and you counter check. Yes. For example, if he only just went to the survey of Kenya, you would have known that that was a sewer.
Exactly.
Yeah. It could have shown very clearly in the map that that was a sewer.
This is Colorful Radio.
During life, your skin is subject to many conditions, leaving your skin rougher and tighter. We want to help. At DermaShack, our unique formula provides day-to-day moisture for all skin types. Our signature cream, DermaDew, is a cream that can be used for both specific areas of dry skin and as a daily moisturizer. So why don't you try our cream, DermaDew, an intense rehydration cream that leaves your skin like silk. Please go to our website, dermashack.co.uk, to see our skincare range and begin your journey into total moisturization. DermaDew, total body cream, complete moisturization.
And something else which I witnessed, which is very painful.
Yeah.
A lot of people, they buy land. And they're shown legit documents that look legit, but in the end, they erect big shopping malls.
Yeah.
Or a house worth millions. But one day you see this ugly tractor.
Yeah, coming to demolish.
Targeting a gate which is worth 100 million.
Yes.
To demolish and demolish the house.
Yeah.
And they just come up with the reason, you build on the government future development land.
But Maluto, the question is this. Compare, you're putting up a structure of 100 million, and how much would the lawyer charge you to do due diligence? Honestly. It's just priorities. If you're going to put 100 million there, then you better spend some good money on due diligence and take your time. And only start, you know, developing once you're absolutely sure.
It's more money to spend.
Yes.
To protect more.
Exactly.
And I wish there was a way to know how far or the boundaries of government land. Because sometimes I'm also thinking, if the government saw somebody building on their land, what stops the government straight away to come and say, stop, don't go ahead? Why do they wait until the whole millions are spent?
Yeah, unfortunately, some of these developers, or rather people, or the people who are developing, they also connive with the people who are in these offices in lands. Eh? But you know, when trouble strikes, these people, you know, stay away from you. So you are the one who will face the music. Yeah, you're the one who's invested the 100 million. Yeah, and that's why sometimes I keep saying, you know, you spend some money, use a legal representative. Let someone who has experience in these things do some proper due diligence for you. Yes.
Yeah, because it's not as easy as I have the money. It's time to buy.
No. And again, remember, for you know, people who are not experienced with these things, they might not understand so many things. But people who are in this field, especially legal representatives, have a lot of experience, and they know even the latest technology people use, or rather the latest tricks people use to connive others. So personally, as an experienced person in buying houses and whatnot, I still use a legal representative personally. I just don't go buy a piece of land or a house just like that. I have to even send the sale agreement to the legal representative, and I have to tell them go through it word for word. Because I told you, one small sentence, those small words, can land you in a lot of trouble. Later on, probably, you know, you might reach a point where you feel like, oh, okay, I don't want to go ahead. I want to withdraw. So you're happy writing a letter to the company, oh, I want to withdraw. But there are those small words which you didn't read.
Small print, we call them?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, probably you'd lose maybe even 40% or 30% of what you had initially invested. Or maybe even the other, even tougher things in there. So I always encourage people, use, that is why we have legal representatives or lawyers. Yes.
Because they know things we don't.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
And protection. Protection must be there in terms of their knowledge will be of use to you. If you use them, yeah.
Yes.
So therefore, the question is, I hear that it has become so easy to check your... You can even do due diligence online. Is that really practical? Is it easy? Because I'm just thinking that I know a lot happened in digitizing land records in Kenya. But are we there yet? I don't know, because I haven't revisited the issue. Are we there yet? Can people really do due diligence online?
I won't talk so much or comment so much about it because it's still ongoing. Because I know they just, I think they started, is it Kiambu or Nairobi? And I won't talk so much about it until we see, you know, over the next, you know, 2-3 years, we see what will become of it. But I tend to think that, you know how people used to change documents manually or a file has disappeared from lands and what all that is going to be a thing of the past. So somehow I think that we are going to, it's going to be, it's getting better than what it used to be. Yeah.
Don't you think a digital file can disappear better by just being deleted?
I've never heard of any digital file disappear so far, but manual files, I know they disappear. Last week you were there, you saw the file. You did a search, but yeah. next week you go, you cannot even do, the search comes out blank.
So technology is technology.
Yeah, has its own challenges.
I always tell people, when you are trying to say you'll be protected by technology, I always say, if you never had faith in people, there are two ways. Way number one, you learn to trust them and know they won't do you no harm.
Yeah.
Two, no, they are people. And the same people who made a physical file to disappear,
they
can make this digital one.
But you see, the digital one has
by just deleting
has trail. It. It has a lot of trail. You logged in, you logged out, you know.
You can delete.
I tend to believe that it probably is going to be safer.
The thing is, in life, no one is safe.
Yeah.
Let me tell you how weak we are as mankind.
Yeah.
When you lock yourself at home, who do you call? Locksmith.
Yeah.
Locksmith will come and open your door very fast. Now, if the locksmith was a thief, how many houses can he break into?
Right.
He knows how to open this door.
Yeah.
When you can't open it yourself.
Yeah, when you can't open it yourself. Yes.
And the best one, once I lost a key for my car, and it was the only key. Then I came across this company. All you need to do is call them. They'll come to you with a big van. All you need to do is to give them registration of your vehicle. They make a key for you to drive your car while you are waiting. Within 20 minutes, you have a key for your car.
Yeah.
And then you ask yourself, what stops them from
nicking all keys for all cars? Because all they would do is read
the
registrations.
Keys. Exactly. The registration is at the front and the back of the car.
Yeah.
It's visible. What stops them?
Yeah.
And I raised that question with one of them and he said to me, no, it's our ethics.
Absolutely.
Our ethics.
Oh,
Don't allow us to misuse our knowledge.
Exactly.
And that's what I'm saying. Whichever way you look at it, we just need to have faith in people.
Absolutely.
And people must have faith in themselves.
That's it.
Because if you're a liar, you start by lying to yourself.
Yes.
Because you know, you are the first person to know it's a lie.
Yeah.
Before anyone says you are lying to me.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
People should have faith in themselves.
Yeah.
Us, we need to trust people.
Yeah.
Because whichever way you look at it, you can't win. So it's the same thing with these land issues and files disappearing and all that. It's a question of, it should come a time we can trust the system. But people working within the system have to trust themselves as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the way I look at it.
Yeah, true. And that's why sometimes I say buying an apartment or a house is way safer than buying a piece of land. Because remember, if you're buying an apartment, you're buying an apartment from probably a developer. So the chances of you being conned your unit are very slim, next to none, as compared to you just going to buy a piece of land which is idle somewhere. Because when you're going to buy a unit, a housing unit, out of, say, 100 units, there's no way it's only that your unit is the one that would be fraudulent and the rest are not, you know. And by the time the developer reaches fourth or fifth floor, if there were issues with the land, the developer would have known by then, you know. So sometimes it's, I find it much safer buying a house than idle land. Yeah.
Okay. So we talk about your investment and how you attract investors to Kenya. How does that work? And do you have anything coming up soon? Or?
Yeah, of course. How it works is I do events. So we have developers in Kenya who want to come and showcase their products in the UK. So I've been lucky that I've developed good networks in the UK, so I'm able to bring or mobilize investors within probably a short time. So, for example, I have an upcoming event whereby I'm targeting 160 potential business investors to this event. And we have one of the giants in the industry called Mivida. They will be coming to the UK to launch their products in the UK. So one of the ways I do it is through events and social media, just generally reaching out to people and letting them know that, hey, I have this product, you know, are you interested? So mainly, like, between now and end of probably September, I will be doing lots of events with just probably different companies.
Okay. Yeah. And the event coming up, where will that be?
Sorry?
The new event.
Oh, this one is a must. It is a very, very important event because this is a giant, you know, in the industry.
Yeah.
Big giant. And one of the major stakeholders is based in the UK. They are called Actis.
Okay.
For people who know Actis, it's been in the industry, it's been in the market for a while. And they're one of the largest emerging markets private equity investors. Okay. One of the largest, not on in the world, actually. So they have partnered with a company from India. So the company in India brings in the technological know-how. They bring in the money. So they merge together. And they have built some beautiful apartments in Kenya. And they are targeting to build about 5,000 across Africa. So they have a huge track record in Kenya. They have done the Java Coffee Houses. They have done the Radisson Blue Hotel in Upper Hill. People who know Nakumat Ngong Road, it's been there for a while now, you know, maybe 20 years or so. They are the ones who've done Nakumat Ngong Road. They have done, what else? I've talked about the Java Coffee Houses. Yes, and the Garden City Mall, the most famous.
Okay.
The one on Thika Road.
Yeah.
So it's been done by the company that is coming. They have a huge track record. So this is the first time, you know, launching their products in the UK. What is amazing about them is that their houses are quality but affordable.
Okay.
You rarely get that combination. So they will be coming on the 29th of April. That's when the launch is going to happen at Canary Wharf. Remember, Canary Wharf is London's financial district.
Yeah, it is.
You want to be in Canary Wharf any minute, any time. I just love, you know, the ambience in Canary Wharf.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Mm.
Yeah, so they will be at the Canary Riverside Plaza.
Okay.
On the 29th. And, you know, I would want people to book and come and interact with the directors. Ask questions, you know, like the questions you're asking me. Ask direct questions to them. The directors will be there.
Mm. Okay, yes. That sounds interesting. Looking forward for that. Oh, so wonderful, wonderful. No, it's been a pleasure having you. Yes. We have learned a lot. We have learned a lot about this chat because at the end of it all, people want to do things. Sometimes they don't know how to.
Absolutely.
It helps to listen to someone who has done it.
Yeah.
So we really appreciate your contribution here.
Yeah.
And of course, yeah, our listeners, that's all we have for now. But don't go away. Stay tuned for more programs coming to you on Colorful Radio. Keep it colorful. The only
colorful,
channel.
Colorful. 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 Colorful